The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Lions Roar Coaches Show here live from Taqueria La Ventana here in Greenville for week number 5 of the Lions Roar Coaches Show. We will lead off once again with our head volleyball coach, Craig Case. The Lions moved up to 21st in the nation in the rankings today with a 12-4 record. Makes it 4 straight weeks in the national rankings, right? Or 5?
I don't know.
Marcus says 4.
4. I'll go with 4. I mean, 5 is good, too. If you want to say 5, I'm all right with
that. Well, I'm okay with 4 because the 12-4 overall record at 4-2 in conference now. 3 big wins last week, all at home. Talk a little bit about how the week went and getting to play at home.
All right. Well, it was exciting to continue our homestand. That was awkward, by the way.
I mean, it's good radio, though.
Great radio. Great Facebook Live.
Yep.
We started out with Dallas Baptist last week, and that was a really important regional match for us because I think they're going to have a really good year in the Heartland Conference, and if we can have a head-to-head win against one of the better teams in the Heartland Conference, that could go a long way for us. So that was a really good win. I thought we played well. We kept working on some stuff and getting some things done, and I thought, we finished that match pretty strong, and I think that momentum carried into the weekend, and the weekend was an exciting, eventful, and stressful weekend, but we were able to get 2 sweeps out of it, and at the end of the day, that's probably what's important.
When you say exciting and stressful and everything, everybody realizes that college volleyball is an indoor sport.
Indoor.
But we did have a weather delay on Friday night. Talk us through a little bit of what happened and why we had a weather delay and then how everything played out.
So this is – I've been coaching collegiately since 2000, and this was the first ever – weather-related delay I've ever experienced in my coaching career. Ultimately, what happened is we had a air conditioning issue on campus, and that situation took the air conditioning offline in the field house. And when the rain started coming in and it poured all weekend, the humidity rose up, and at some level, you could see water just kind of standing in a condensation on the court. It was less than ideal. Yes, and so safety was the concern, and then we worked with campus partners, and then we were able to figure out, about what time we would be we'd be able to get on court, and we delayed the match until that point, and then we started our weekend that way.
So I'd actually heard of another similar delay in college volleyball this year.
Okay.
And it was in the University of Minnesota. So I think it's just a Minnesota mojo that's messing with volleyball.
Yeah, they played Kansas State. They had heat. They couldn't play because of extreme temperatures. So, and had it been just hot, we would have been all right playing. But it was the wet court and the danger that posed. So we worked with the coaches from Cameron as well and their administration, and we moved back an hour and a half and started at 7:30 instead of 6.
From the player's perspective, I know from my perspective, I'm sitting still during most of the match, so a little bit cooler is preferred. But I know different athletes like different conditions. Would they have preferred a warm gym, cold gym? What's your team like, or does it matter?
It doesn't matter. I mean, dry floor.
That's probably important.
We've done all of them. Our gym's usually pretty cool, and we practice in there in the mornings, and, we're wearing sweatshirts and long sleeve shirts the whole practice, and we're used to that. We've been at other gyms where it's hot, and you just get out and play. So, that didn't affect us, and I thought our players managed to stop the momentum pretty well because we'd normally have a serve and receive and kind of get into our rhythm of stuff, and then we get right into our practice protocol or our warm up protocol, and this day we didn't. So it was I thought our players handled that really well and came back ready to play. An hour and a half after they thought they were going to start.
One of the other parts being around for that match and seeing the crowd stick around and kind of come in all at once after the delay and everything, that was a neat feeling. It was like opening the gates to Disney World or something.
Yeah, it was really cool. I'm standing there in my office, which is right at the front of the gym, and right at 6 o'clock, just the doors opened up, and I just see all these people coming in, and I was like, this is a big volleyball match tonight.
Yeah.
It got even more a little more exciting for me, too.
Going through the weekend, sweeps over Cameron and Midwestern State.
Yep.
Both programs not where they want to be in the standings. They've been up and down over the course of the time that I've been following the LSC. But they turned into pretty tough matches at certain points, as volleyball tends to.
Yeah.
When you look at it, most volleyball matches are very, very close most of the time. But
yep.
Yeah, I think the team did a good job making sure they put away opponents that they should have.
Yeah, you know, I thought, you know, we're still working out some lulls where we're, you know, we get comfortable and then we let the other team surge. And so we're still working on that. You know, but I think both of those teams, you know, talent-wise, there are a lot. I mean, there are at least 500-level teams, if not more, based on their talent. So it's just a matter of time before those teams start clicking and start winning some volleyball matches. They've had a tough road trip, to, you know, road schedule to start. You know, they hosted Eastern New Mexico and West Texas to open conference play.
Eastern seems to be rolling now, too, based on what I've seen.
Neither of those teams you want to play, especially in your conference opener. So they had two tough home games to start out. Probably got caught off guard a little bit because you don't know anything about those guys. And then, you know, moving forward, then they went out to Eastern New Mexico – or Western New Mexico, excuse me, Permian Basin. And that's just a tough road trip that we get to enjoy next weekend. So, you know, they'll win. They're going to win their share of matches. And we're just glad we were able to get them at home and knock them off in three and move on and get ready for this weekend.
We'll talk a little bit more about the upcoming road trip in a second, but I want to talk about the field house in general and the support that we've had there. And then going back to, we haven't lost there since 2016. We only lost one match that year. I believe it's 18 straight home matches that we've won, five this year. We talked about it last week. You know, we've been on the road. It was great to be home. And now you've knocked out almost half your home schedule at once, but you've won two of them in four and three of them in sweeps. What is it about the field house that makes it such a great place for our team to play?
Well, one, you know, it's unique. And so there's not a lot of gyms like the field house. The closest is probably TWU because they've got an end that just keeps going like we do. That's a start. I think the biggest thing is our fans, though. I mean, our fan support is incredible. When you're not playing great, they let you know in a very polite way. And, you know, maybe more a little more silence than you'd like. But the second you do one good thing, they just go nuts. And it's a loud gym, too. So a little bit of noise goes a long way in that place. So they reward our efforts really well. And because of that, you know, I think our team does a great job of feeding off of them and creating momentum and doing all that stuff. But they're smart fans. When you're playing hard, they'll get behind you, winning or losing. But if you're being lazy and you're being undisciplined, they're not all that interested in that. So we've got great fans, and you know, we love to get out and make sure that we're putting on our best effort for them.
One of the other things that I noticed in the last two matches that I got to see, I didn't get to see Saturday's match against Midwestern State, but the dynamic of your team has changed a little bit with the addition of Celeste Vela as a all-around player. She's a setter, she's a hitter, she's a back, she does a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And so that's moved Riley Fuentes into more of a defensive role. And honestly, I thought she saved a couple of very, very, very important points in one of the tight sets against Cameron for sure. And it has changed the dynamic of the team, so you can do any number of different combinations that it seems like most teams don't have that luxury.
Yeah, I mean, Riley Fuentes has had an exceptional year. I mean, her impact on our team's success cannot be understated. You know, I think at one point she was our highest producing setter. Mm-hmm. And then we had an injury that we lost a drastic amount of defense and ball control out of. And so then we took her out of the setting position, and we're using her primarily as a defensive specialist. And she's been incredible there, too. So she's just, right now, she's playing as high of a level as she's ever played in our program. And, you know, you said we're 12-4. I mean, not one of those 12 wins. Well, I guess one.
Yeah, one.
11 of those wins wouldn't be possible without her contribution. So, you know, she's been an incredible force all year, and she's a competitive kid. She's a smart volleyball player, and she just makes us better, and she's going to continue to do that. And you know, it's pretty promising when you've got a young lady like that that's willing to step away from her best position to be where the team needs her in order to win. And so I've been excited about her. And then, you know, Celeste is just, she's a really good volleyball player, you know, and you find a way to put really good volleyball players in position to produce, and they find a way to produce. So, you know, we've been really pleased with her, and you know, I think the sky's the limit for her. She's a long way from being as good of a player as she's going to be 4 years from now.
Is that something with that multiple position, is there that much specialization before people get to college where I grew up as an outside hitter, I'm always an outside hitter, or is it something where sort of like in baseball, you always put your best athlete at shortstop, even if he's not a natural shortstop. How does that progression go through a player's career? Is Is there too much over-specialization in your sport?
No, it's pretty accurate, especially at our level. You know, the tough thing for her is just getting enough reps to be a good hitter every week and enough reps to be a good setter every week. So, you know, for her, I think she grew up as a setter and then has also played other positions, just kind of going. So, you know, she's really well-rounded. Like I said, the challenge for us now is making sure that she's getting enough reps with our setting core to make sure all of our setters are setting similar balls, but at the same time, being able to work on her ability to produce, because when she's up there, we need her to score. And so she's right now doing whatever we ask her to do and doing it as best she can, and then we're hopefully winning because of it.
Moving ahead to this week, we're at UT Permian Basin on Friday night, and then a night Saturday match at Western New Mexico in Silver City. Change of travel partners. I think you and I have discussed this. It seems like Odessa to Silver City is a relatively easy trip compared to Portales to Silver City, but it seems like Silver City to anywhere is not much of a easy trip. Like I'm saying, it's all relative. Tell us a little bit about these teams, this trip, and what you want to see after being you've got the longest road trip of the year now after being at home for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, in every level, both teams are really good. You know, UT Permian Basin, remarkable improvement from last year. I'm really impressed with the team that coaching staff has put together, and they're playing really hard and really confident. You put those two teams in with a little bit of talent, and, you know, they're going to be a tough team to beat, especially at home. And then, next you go to Western New Mexico, and you know, Jim out there, the head coach, he's a legend in coaching. I mean, he knows how to win volleyball matches, and every year, every match, every set, his teams are prepared. And so, you know, we're going to have to go out and win those matches differently, but we're just going to have to go out and do whatever it takes to win those matches based on the opportunities that we're given.
Looks like, looking ahead at the schedule, you finally get in that rhythm of a week on the road, week at home, week on the road, week at home. How much does rhythm and comfort factor play into what you guys want to do?
I think when you get into that alternating, it's good because you don't ever feel like you're just getting beaten down on the road. Or even like now, I think we've gotten a little comfortable at home. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to get into that. You're going to be sharp for both of them. So we're going to be going out on the road, and you know, you haven't been on the road for a while, so it'll be exciting again. And we'll fly out to Odessa and fly out of El Paso, and then then we get to come home and we get to get back into that rhythm, and then we get to go back on the road. So I'm really liking the remainder of our conference schedule and the balance that it poses.
All right, well, good luck the rest of the season, obviously. Good luck this weekend. That's Craig Case, the head coach of the number 21 team in the nation, Lion Volleyball, up to 12-4. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our head football coach, Colby Carthel, here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show from Taqueria La Ventana in Greenfield.
The program you're enjoying right now was made possible by a group of folks just like you who make contributions to public radio. Support programs just like this one. Visit KETR.org and click donate.
All right, we're back here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show live from Taqueria La Ventana here in Greenville. We're here with our head football coach, Colby Carthel. Lions took one on the chin in the rain the other night, 23-13 against a solid Colorado State Pueblo team in far less than ideal conditions, but we got the game in, which was my concern going into the week. Looking at the weather report, I thought we might be there until 4 in the morning, kind of like Permian Basin a couple of years ago. Give us kind of your basic thoughts on how the day went from top to bottom. I'm sure there was some uncertainty, just a little bit of throwing off the rhythm.
Yeah, shoot. Way it turned out, I kind of wish we could go back and say there was lightning and just go ahead and cancel the game afterwards. But I guess we played it, and I guess we got beat. So we'll have to live with that one. But it was a different ball game, you know, played in a monsoon, I guess you'd call it. It was a great rain, great for this area. I think I had 5.5 inches in my gauge here at the house. So it was some good wet weather, some football weather. Unfortunately, we just didn't play real well. And credit Colorado State Pueblo. Those guys did. They came in and played really good football and held on to the football better than we did, which ultimately proved to be the difference in the ball game. You can't go -4, the way I figure it, -5 in the turnover battle and expect to even come close to winning. We ought to almost be thinking our lucky stars is only a 10-point loss because I think on the official stats we had 5 turnovers and they had 1. But
we went up with 2. We gave them 1 on the kickoff.
Yeah, and well, we had 2 turnovers that aren't on there as well with a – fumbled punt snap. That's a turnover in my book. And then a well-called fake punt on there. You know, we're fixing to get the ball back, and we let them keep it with a fake punt. So, to me, that's seven turnovers, and that's just completely unacceptable and a big reason why the outcome was what it was. So, anyway, we got a chance to learn from it. And that wasn't a bad team we lost to. Those guys were national champions in 2014. This is supposedly one of their better teams they've had since then. So I expect them to have a good year and to be a playoff team. And Coach Riston does a great job with that program. And I hope we can right some of the wrongs and get rolling again and maybe meet up with those guys again in the postseason. That'd be fun. But in the meantime, we got to lick our wounds and get ready to play better football this week.
After a loss, which has been fairly uncommon in the 2.5 seasons I've been here for, this is only the fourth loss in the last three seasons overall, so it's not common. It's not something we talk about very much. So it is easier to be down on it because it is so uncommon. What are some of the positives you saw from the team top to bottom?
We got a lot of good rain in the area, so that was a positive. But no, shoot, the guys, I was really pleased. You know, there were some things that we were dealing with within the team this past week that I was really excited about how they responded. And I feel, as I talk to the team, I feel really good about where we are as a team in terms of who we have in that locker room and making up the roster. So, you know, the guys played really hard, played to the very end, handled defeat with class. You know, that's for a team that doesn't lose very often. You know, a lot of times you don't know how people are going to handle defeat. A lot of times in today's society, people don't handle losing or failure in a proper manner. And there's a lot you can learn from losing. It's really only a loss if you don't learn from it, whether you're talking about football or life or relationships or what have you. And so there's so much that you can learn from yourself as a positional player and what makes you up from a offense, a defense, and in a team, and in an outcome like we had Saturday. So we're excited to see how we rebound. No one likes losing. You know, we felt terrible last season when we lost to Midwestern State, you know, but we looked ourselves in the mirror and got some things fixed and got on a winning streak following that game, and it turned out to be a real blessing, and 2017 turned out okay.
Yeah, even I would say that, yeah.
A tough loss, and I'm not at all saying that's how this one's going to turn out, but if we can, you know, rebound from it and come back better and stronger, and that loss helps us alleviate maybe some future bumps in the road on the schedule, then that ends up being a win overall. So that's what great teams do, is they rebound and learn from it and don't make the same mistakes twice. So anxious to see how this team responds.
Some of the positives that I saw looking through the stat sheet, of course, I wind up watching film on Sunday now too, just because it's what I do. I appreciate what coaches do on Sunday now because I go back and watch the film a little more. But CSU Pueblo ran almost 30 more plays than we did, but we held them to 3 of 20 on third down. So over the course of the last two games, we've only given up 4 third down conversions, and I think it's 1 out of every 9 third downs our opponents are converting. So this defense is really standing up, even though they're on the field a lot more than they'd like in certain situations.
Defense has played very, very well. They're getting stronger as the year goes on. We knew it would be a good unit. Obviously, there were some learning curves, installing a brand-new defense without having spring ball and everything. But they're really starting to lock in and make the checks and the adjustments needed. And, you know, if you really start to look at it, the last two games, they have yet to give up a normal touchdown. Past two teams, neither one of them have drove the field and scored a touchdown on us. The 3 touchdowns we've given up in the last two games have both been the results of very short fields.
5 yards, 30 yards, and 27 yards.
There you go, stat man.
See?
So that was, you know, that's good to see. If we can continue that trend and then, you know, get some of the turnovers fixed and adjusted on special teams and offense, you know, we've got a championship-caliber defense. And that's what they say, is defense wins championships. So we'll put that to the test this year, and hopefully those guys continue to rise to the occasion. But they are playing at a high level, especially on third down. Coach Power gets them dialed in and usually gets home.
One of those defenders actually wound up getting special teams player of the week this week in Dominique Ramsey, a huge 72-yard punt return for a touchdown. His average nearly 20 yards of punt return. He had a kickoff return. He had 4 tackles. I believe he had 2 pass breakups. Went through, I think, 2 or 3 jerseys.
through the course of the night. I mean, that kid had a heck of a ball game.
He sure did. He you know, pound for pound, maybe our best football player. He is really savvy on defense, has notes for the football, is lightning fast, and he will flat strike you. He knocked a guy there off the sideline. He landed about lane six on the track. But really has made some good plays in special teams. He had a kick return for a touchdown against William Jewell that got called back due to a penalty. So he's lightning in a bottle. He's fun to watch back there, kick return, punt return, and really fun to watch on defense. So excited to see him get recognized by the conference. That was a first.
That was a first. I'll leave that one there as well. Moving into this week, what's kind of the attitude when team meetings and stuff yesterday going into a new opponent that we really don't know that much about, don't even know anything about their conference, really. We've never played that conference in anything. It's definitely a different type of ball game for the middle of the year. What's the attitude like around the team right now?
You know, it's we're not really too focused on Lock Haven. You know, and we weren't really focused on Pueblo. I mean, we try to focus on ourselves and things we need to improve and in all facets of the game. So, like you said, there's, you know, some things we didn't do well, not just hanging on the football, but throughout the course of the game, some things exposed themselves that we need to get fixed and alleviated. So I think we're going to do that, and the team is anxious to get them fixed and respond in a championship manner. So we will dig into Lock Haven a little more as the week goes on. As coaches, we've been watching film already and getting the game plan together. But hopefully have a great week of practice and get a few guys maybe back healthy with us that got bumped or bruised. I don't know what time the game is, but is it 6?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock on Saturday. I think we'll be ready to play and respond in a championship manner and hopefully get another victory.
With that crazy weather we had, it seemed like it would rain and then stop for about 5 minutes and then rain worse and then stop for about 5 minutes and rain worse. It just kept going and going. You've been coaching for quite a while in this conference, and normally there's thunderstorms and you'll get off the field and that kind of thing. That's just how the weather in Texas works.
Right.
What's the weirdest weather game that you can remember being involved with?
The strangest weather game, you know, there's been a few that, you know, just had some crazy lightning. We were playing out at Blackwater Draw one time at Eastern New Mexico. This is a previous institution, but it was, you know, we got delayed about five different times, finished the game up about 2 a.m, but there was one time, you know, we were there, and, I mean, there was clouds all around, and lightning struck, I swear, like 5 yards outside the end zone, and yet the thorough guard or whatever we was going off of, it didn't set it off, and so we were like, what do we do? But we just went in and went to the locker room, even though the thing wasn't working. It makes you feel real good about the
technology.
Technology. That was probably a decade or two ago, so I think things have changed. But that was definitely probably the most intense rain game I've been a part of. It was really, really wet. It got worse as the game went on. It had nothing to do with the outcome. The outcome was decided by the fact that we couldn't hang on the football, and they could. So we both played in the same weather. But it was, you know, it's football weather. It's a defense and special teams game, and that's really what it came down to. And they made a few more plays in the special teams, and their defense caused a few more turnovers than ours, and that ended up deciding the outcome.
All right. Well, we look forward to talking to you again later in the week as we get ready for Lock Haven. Look forward to hearing what you learn about Lock Haven. I mean, this is one of those cross-sectional games that just doesn't happen that much in Division II, like we were talking about a couple weeks ago. You don't get opportunities to play teams that you don't know that often. And I think as coaches, you got to kind of look forward to it because it's a little bit of a change of pace, but it also throws off your rhythm a little bit too, I'm sure.
Yeah, it'll be fun to, you know, introduce our team and our program to a new opponent and our fans. You know, I mean, Pennsylvania plays some good football. Everybody knows about Penn State and Pitt, and been some great players come out of the Keystone State, I believe, as they call it.
Look at that.
Anyway, it'll be fun to square off against those guys and hopefully get back in the win column. You know, we've always responded well from a loss, and that was, I believe, the first loss we've had at home in over 2 years and is actually the worst defeat we've had against a D2 opponent in the regular season since our first year here, since we got beat up at Canyon 60-something to 20-something. I mean, so the few losses we've incurred here over the past 4 or 5 years have been usually close games decided by single digits, and so that one was a double-digit loss by 10 points, and like I say, it could have been a whole lot worse as bad as we handled ourselves in the turnover margin. But we're anxious to get rolling again and respond in a championship manner and hopefully start a new winning streak. We'd won 13 games in a row and had a lot of good things happen to us after that last loss, so hopefully we can do the same with this one.
Yeah, winning streaks are great to talk about, but it's also good to say 14 wins out of the last 15. That still sounds pretty good.
There you go.
So, all right, well, we'll talk to you more as the week goes on. We'll be back here on the Coach's Show next Monday night from Snuffers. That's been our head football coach, Colby Carthel. We'll be right back. We're going to talk golf.
Golf.
To wrap up the Coach's Show, we'll be right back after a quick break.
This show and others like it from KETR.org are made possible by generous contributions from listeners just like you. Donate today at KETR.org.
All right, we're back here on the Lions Roar Coaches Show, Episode 5 here from Taqueria La Ventana in Greenville. We're here with our relatively new head golf coach, Matt Ward, the first time we've had him on the air. Yeah, go golf. Let's make noise for golf. You don't get to do that very often, unless you were at East Lake yesterday. So give us a little bit of breakdown, moving in, getting used to A&M Commerce, and
yeah.
How's the transition of becoming a Lion?
So far, so good. It's a very different mentality and culture here than what I came from. I left Colorado Mesa after 4 years, coached men's golf, and then lectured in kinesiology. Now I have both men's and women's golf here at A&M Commerce, and just a different mentality in the athletic department. It's a lot of fun to be here. There is definitely a mentality about winning, you know, best in class. The mission is not just lip service, it's real. So it's been good. It's definitely a different area to live in than Grand Junction, Colorado. It's a little rainy here for what I'm used to. But
Not like this every fall. It's just the last couple of weeks.
And it's never like this there. 300-plus days a year of sunshine was pretty nice. But I certainly wouldn't trade it for being where I'm at now. I love it here and in the department, the other coaches and the support staff and the admin. It's a great place to be.
So with a new head coach comes new coaching staff, new style and everything. Give us a little breakdown of who you've got helping out coach your two teams.
Absolutely. So right after I got here, we immediately went into a full-time assistant coach search and found Lauren Mason. She was a player at Texas Tech University, was there for 5 years, ended up getting her master's degree there, played on two teams that went to the national championship. So she's cut her teeth as a heck of a good player. Very intelligent young woman, very good coach. Everybody on both teams, 17 players worth, have responded very positively to her and her coaching style. She and I see eye to eye on a lot of things, and a couple things we don't, which is good. She kind of keeps me in check and some of the things I do. So she's a really good compliment to me and our staff. And then we have a couple others helping out. Wilfredo Sanchez, who played last year and a couple years here at Commerce, is helping out. And then Buddy Jones, who's been here for
More than a couple years.
Yeah, he's been here for a while. It's I think 11 or 12 years. It's been a while. So it's nice to have that sort of support staff with us, too, because when we split up teams and travel at the same time, you can bring two coaches each event, which is really nice because that's not common in Division II or anywhere for that matter. So for us, again, it goes back to the support that we get from the admin and the department, and we're one of the few programs in the country that's able to do that. So great to have the support and the coaching staff that we have and really feel good about what I inherited from a talent level. Both teams just full of good kids and not just on the course but off the course too. They're really good young men and women and pretty talented players too. So it's been a welcome surprise for that. But
We talked to our cross-country coach on the air a couple weeks ago, and cross-country radio is not common, and golf talk radio is a little more common, but not so much on a college coach's show. This is a nice treat. So for a lot of our fans and listeners and viewers here on Facebook Live, they may not understand how the schedule works and everything. Give us a little breakdown of, because you guys play all year. You can play golf in Texas most of the year. How does it all work out for you guys?
Well, for golf and college, we have a split schedule, so we play both fall and spring. Our championships are held in the spring every year, but in the fall we end up getting four tournaments for each team, and they all count. And you typically play a tournament. Smallest tournament we'll play, it'll probably have between 8 and 12 teams in it. I think this weekend the guys travel to New Mexico, and we have, I want to say, 16 or 17 teams in that event. So it's never a heads-up match. You're always playing 8, 9, 10, 15, 18 teams at a time. So it's a little different than other sports. But then we kick back in the spring and do the same thing. You'll play, I think we get 6 more events in the spring for each team. And every tournament, like I said, 10, 12 teams apiece. So you're wins are hard to come by when you're playing that many teams. You know, if it was just heads up, it'd be a little different. But when you go on the road to a lot of schools and their home courses, and you really got to bring something special if you're going to win a tournament on the road. And we're on the road for every single tournament for both teams this year. So it's a little different than a lot of other sports. But It's a lot of fun when you get to go up and play 10, 11, 12 teams at a time. And if you bring something to them, it's kind of fun to say, well, we didn't just beat one team. We beat 12 or 13 of them. Yeah. That's fun.
Looking at what's happened so far this season, the guys have only played one tournament. As you said, they'll play again next Monday and Tuesday. Went out to Amarillo and played in WT's event. Finished just outside the top 10 in the team standings. I know it wasn't exactly the way we planned it, the way the scoring and everything worked there at the end, but a couple of really strong individual performances there as well.
Absolutely. You know, we had a little bit of a mental or emotional lapse towards the end of our day on Tuesday, which managed to get a player of ours DQ'd, and that dropped us down a handful of strokes and a few spots in the leaderboard, so that hurt. But, you know, after we met with both teams and kind of discussed everything with them, I think that won't be another problem again this year at all. And we did have some good individual rounds out there. I think Lucas McCubbin rolled out a 65 in the second round on Monday, which is obviously pretty solid. And Blake Hartford played well both days. Blake's just a gamer. It's fun. He doesn't like to be coached much, which is fine with me, but he goes out and if you put more pressure on him, he rises the occasion. It's a rare thing to find that, especially in golf. Usually they just crumble, and Blake seems to find a way to put it even, you know, he'll put the pedal to the metal. He does even better when you put the pressure on him, he goes. He's a returning conference champ from the Lone Star Conference last year, so that's always nice to see. And Lucas was the player of the year last year in the Lone Star Conference, so good to get them both back. And, you know, we've got a couple of really good young players too. Zach Burtz is only a sophomore, and I think if you asked everybody on the team, everybody would say to a person he's the best player on the team. So nice to have those three as a nucleus. Joe Wolchik's having a heck of a good fall so far in qualifying and tournaments. He's done well. And we've got a new freshman in here, Alex Welch, who's been playing really good in qualifying. So he's going to the next couple of events. So we'll see how he can handle, you know, some college golf pressure. So it's good. Right now we got a pretty solid team. It's pretty deep. And it's always nice to have that problem when you're putting 7-8 guys out there for five spots, because they push each other pretty hard. So good to see that on the men's side for sure.
Tell us a little bit about the roster makeup of the women's team. Sure. I mean, it's a young team, but still has tons of experience and two of the top rounds in school history already this year.
Yeah, the women's team has been, I think, a surprise to a fair amount of people, certainly not to me after I had met up with all the players when I first got here and saw what they were capable of. I knew this team had a lot of talent. It is very young. We only have one senior, one junior, five sophomores, and one freshman, so a rather unusual makeup, but a ton of talent on this roster. There's not one person on this team who isn't going to compete for a top five spot all year. They're going to beat each other up pretty hard, which is good. But we were fortunate. I was referred a Division I transfer. She came in, and she has been our number one in both events. Sarah Wongsynth, who went out to the Tarleton event, went out 69-72, which is pretty solid golf, especially when we were playing in just a downpour rain on Tuesday. So kept it together pretty well out there, and then went out to Grand Junction. She played well there. Was our number one finisher again. And I don't know if that was such a surprise. I think the biggest surprise right now, which has been very pleasant, is Paige Lee Garris, who has been our clear-cut number two. And she's really flourished playing here. And it's nice to see her playing really well, because I know Sophie's a solid player. I know McKenna's a solid player. I mean, it's just solid top to bottom on this team. So it's really good to see them. I think they're still learning how to compete and win, because it is a young team. Tarleton was a good tournament. We went to Grand Junction. We were two shots out of first place after the first day, and when we got on the front nine on Tuesday, it was like we were trying to hang on to something we didn't actually possess. And so on the back nine, I challenged them to play a little bit tougher and grittier, and they did. Of the five players, four of them posted a better back nine score, and the fifth shot the same score. So it was good to see the girls step up and compete in the back nine, and I think if we get a little bit more of that grittiness on that team, they're going to be a really tough team to beat, because the talent's there. And they're just a really good group too. I mean, they're good kids, but they got to pull out a little bit of that grit and that toughness. And I think we'll see that when we get to DBU's tournament. And I know we'll see it in Albuquerque when we go play the Skyhawk Invitational. That'll be a fun tournament for everybody. But these girls have got it, and I think they're making some waves in this part of the country. And the Lone Star and the Heartland are raising an eyebrow or two about how good this team is. And I don't see them dipping anytime soon. I think they'll just get better all year.
Golf is definitely one of the more social sports out of all the sports, but it's also kind of strange that even when we hosted home events in the past, they weren't necessarily home events.
Right.
So it's a little bit harder for a Lion fan to get to know your team than compared to Craig's volleyball team, who people see two, three right. times a week, every other week. You've got something coming up where fans have a chance to meet your team and get to know your team and get to maybe a few golf pointers here and there, probably needed. Tell us a little bit about that event, what's going on, when it is, that kind of thing.
Sure. Right now it's tentatively scheduled for October 12th. That's a Friday afternoon, evening time frame out at Sulphur Springs Country Club, which is the course that we practice at. It's basically our home course. We're going to set up basically a meet-and-greet tournament, so three-person teams. I think they're $150 a team, and we will assign one or two players, depending on how many teams we have. We'll assign one of the players from either the men's or the women's team to your group, and play your 18 holes, scramble format, have a good time with them, and then we're done, have some dinner. Really a true sense of the word meet-and-greet type tournament. This is not really a fundraiser for us. It's more of a let's get to know everybody and get to know the people in Sulphur Springs and Commerce and Greenville and get all them out there so they can meet these players, because you're right, it is difficult for anybody to meet the golfers, so we don't play at home. And, you know, when we do play, it's probably closest as, you know, a DBU's tournament. Well, we're not hosting it, but, you know, anybody's certainly welcome to go out there, but it is different. And this is a good opportunity to meet the 17 players and the four coaches out there. We'll all be out there shaking hands and meeting people and trying to grow our fan base for golf, because, again, that's not the easiest thing to do in college golf either. But we'll give it our best, and I think everybody who comes out is in for a treat. They really are. You know, I know they're my teams, but I did inherit them. And I will say this, I'm pleasantly surprised. The 17 players are all really good kids. They're good personalities and a lot of fun to be around. They got a good sense of humor collectively, and it'll show up on that tournament for sure.
Tell us, how do you coach a tournament? You've got five players on different holes at the same time, and there's one of you. You don't have a caddy like you're seeing on TV or something like that. I've been at a number of college golf tournaments. I've been an assistant coach at a college golf tournament, which really just meant I drove around and gave people sandwiches.
That's kind of what I do, too.
Okay, because, I mean, Craig is at the bench the entire time. Coach Carthel is on the bench or on the sideline the entire time. Most coaches are right there with their players. Your player could be practically half a mile away,
right?
But you still have to coach them. How do they contact? How does that
Ours
work?
Is different. You know, typically if we have two coaches there, it's a little easier. On the men's side, it's nice and easy. Blake, who is pretty much at every event, he doesn't really like to be coached, which is fine with me.
He keeps getting conference player of the year. I mean,
You leave him alone. He likes to be left alone, which is fine with me. Yeah, so I put him in the one slot because we'll have him in five consecutive groups. So I'll take the five and four, the five and assistant. And I'll give them the two and three, and I'll give them the golf cart, and they drive around. And basically, you know, you coach them as much as you can. And if you see, we have live scoring in almost every event, so it's easy to tell when it might be going off the rails for one of the players. You just go up to him and try and calm them down. I mean, my job has less to do with golf strategy and more to do with golf psychology than anything else, and keeping their head on straight and their emotions in check. And so when we're out there, obviously we have, you know, stuff to keep them going energy-wise, food and drinks and whatnot. But when you're a coach, and a lot of times it is like being a caddy. So for me, coming up this week, Alex Welch is going out as a true freshman, which I have every confidence in Alex's abilities, but that first tournament's going to be a little bit nerve-wracking for him. And so I'll end up with the first probably 2, 3, 4 holes with him until he calms down and gets his heart rate back down to a normal rate. And, you know, we'll talk him through some shots and get him through it, and then, you know, we'll just cycle through those two players between him and Joe. Those will be the two that I handle. Coach Mason will hang out with Zach and Luke and work with those two. And on the par threes, we kind of pass along information. As Alex and Joe go through, I'll wait until Coach Mason gets there. I'll give her the information that I've seen as far as club selection, distance, kind of where the misses are at. She'll relay it to those two and wait till Blake comes up, give him the information, and then immediately go back up and catch up with Luke and Zach. And so you do kind of do a lot of tag teaming. Last week was fun when we were at Colorado Mesa's event. In the back nine, they have about 6-7 holes that are really stacked right on top of each other. So between Coach Mason and I, we just wandered around right next to each other and caught all five players pretty regularly. So you do get to give the advice and read putts with them and kind of help them club selections and course strategy and stuff like that. So you do – it is pretty – involved, but it is very different because you're not with all of your players who are competing at that time. So it is a little different.
So as a golf coach, what is the most common thing, or what's something you could say without having to look at somebody's swing that will make them play better?
Well, that's
Ooh.
Tough. I think the biggest mistake that most amateurs make is they try and actually hit the golf ball, and they try and hit it hard. The reality is this, you're just trying to swing a golf club and let the golf ball get in the way, which means you don't need to grip it as tight as most people typically do. Just swing easy and let the club do the work.
Okay, I think I might get my shots, my score down to it, about a solid 170.
Yeah, we're good.
Now, and that might be useful. Maybe. Well, hey, good luck the rest of the season. You're gone the rest of the Mondays.
Yeah.
So I'm impressed that we were able to get you on a show in the fall. New development. That's Coach Matt Ward. You can keep up with the Lions on lionathletics.com. You won't see him at many coaches' show because they are gone most
most Mondays and Tuesdays for tournaments. We will wrap up the show right there. Looks like lots of home events this weekend. We'll be at home on Friday night for soccer, Saturday night for football, and Sunday afternoon for soccer. And you can catch up with the schedules and everything, as always, on LionAthletics.com. We're going to sign off the Lions Roar Coaches Show. I'm Josh Mank. Thanks for watching.